Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
He kō nā ipurangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Kia ora caucus whānau, it is time for another dip into the 2023 election campaign. It's great to have your company again. I'm Tim Watkin.
I'm Julian Wilcox.
And I'm Lisa Owen.
And I'm Guyan Espiner.
And it's lovely to have you here, whether you're listening to us as a podcast, watching us on YouTube, listening on the radio, or however you choose to join your caucus. Today, overseas voting has opened. Advance voting in New Zealand starts on Monday. Election day is about a fortnight away, depending on when you're listening to this. And guess what, guys? We're talking about Winston Peters.
Yeah, I picked up a headline in the Herald the other day about a kingmaker and a photo of a certain septuagenarian. And, you know, it could have been a headline from 96 or 05, but I checked the date and no, it was 2023.
There it is. And the poll, we're doing this because the polls have New Zealand First at 5 or 6%. And because earlier this week, Christopher Luxon said this.
If New Zealand First has returned to Parliament and I need to pick up the phone to Mr. Peters to keep Labour and the coalition of chaos out, I will make that call. That's not my first preference. We all remember 2017. New Zealand First hasn't gone with National in 27 years and could choose Labour again.
So guys, I mean, why now? Why this call? Luxon has for months and weeks been saying this is a hypothetical, two-tick National, this is a hypothetical, two-tick National.
Everything's hypothetical leading up to an election and the ultimate poll. So they're happy to discuss potential partnerships with ACT, which is hypothetical. They're happy to discuss when Nicola Willis will be the finance minister, which is hypothetical.
Tax plan is hypothetical.
Yep, this is the one hypothetical that they didn't want to have the conversation about. I think it comes down to the conversation we all had, possibly in the last episode, where we said the polls are now at a situation where it's tight for National. They don't have a lot of leverage. If they lose a little bit, then they've sunk below their majority with ACT. Yeah. So this is the insurance policy. And I think as sort of media commentators, we can't all sit there and say, oh, come on, tell us what you're going to do. And then when he actually does tell you what he's going to do, then go, why are you doing that? You know. So he's given some clarity as much as he can. And I think what is most interesting for me in that video is his tone, He's trying to get his tone bang on, which is I'm not ordering you to do something because New Zealand voters hate it when they are told, I think, that I need you to do this in order that I can achieve what I need to, right? So, but he is saying, if I need to, I will pick up the phone to Winston Peters. It is not my priority. So there's two things. It's a warning. And it's a plea.
Yeah. I think you got it pretty much right, as Lisa said.
His tone, the tone was
and also the content of what he said. It's very obviously not his preferred option. I don't think it's anyone's preferred option, whether you're Chris Hipkins or Christopher Luxon.
Well,
yeah, exactly. But if you're Hipkins, you've obviously ruled him out. And Luxon's made that pretty clear, I think. You know, obviously, he's talking about this has to be the case if I'm going to be the Prime Minister and I need him, then I'll make the call. The line that always gets me now is he's still pulling the coalition of chaos. Does anyone actually believe that there's going to be less chaos with National, New Zealand First and ACT as opposed to Labour, Greens and Māori Party? And I go back to a conversation we've already had previously where Guyan said, surely you'd want to pick up the phone and have a conversation with someone else if you have to do it. But he's made that very clear he's not because he's pulled this coalition of chaos line. But I don't think that line plays very well anymore.
No, and I think that strategically he's made several errors when you look back mark on it. What did John Key do at the start of every election year?
Yeah.
He'd take to the podium in February of election year and tell people, A, when the election was going to be, which was a real sign of confidence. I'm not going to use my strategic advantage here. I'm going to tell you when the election's going to be. And I'm also going to lay out who the partners I am, who I'm going to work with. And that takes a lot of the sting out of it. I mean, part of the reason Luxon's had to do this now is because he kept getting asked, will you work with Winston? Will you work with Winston? That was sucking up oxygen. And his main plank of defence, which was he's not registering in the polls, had suddenly been pulled from him. So it wasn't there anymore. The polling was showing he wasn't going to make it with ACT, and so he had to do that. But he also previously had ruled out the Māori Party, Te Pāti Māori, and that only worked if you could play we're in one waka going straight ahead, kotahi atu, and these guys are spinning around in circles like the old rowing ads from the Nats in the past. That only worked if the coalition chaos, it only worked if you had ruled out Winston Peters. So I think strategically and he's made an error, but he was forced into cleaning it up and he had no other option.
He had to do it in that week because the advance voting was going to open and he had to go get the message out so that voters actually knew what they're going to do, because he's asking for people to now think. It's what Lisa was saying, and it's interesting that it's somehow a plea on one hand to say, this is how I can form a government. You can still... He's trying to make the sense of a national-led government seem inevitable. But at the same time, it's a warning which actually says, I will work with Winston Peters. Please don't make me do that. And this is different, right? This is different. Every other election, Winston has been wooed to some extent. This time, everybody is actively pushing against him.
Yeah, until it results in them not shifting the furniture into the ninth floor of the Beehive. Yeah, so, I mean, this is down to four-dimensional chess that we're playing now, isn't it?
Because they're saying one thing and asking for another.
That's right. And Luxon is, as you say, trying to warn people of the chaos that might result in Winston Peters being part of the mix, but also showing them that he's got a reliable path to government. So it is a fine line that he's walking.
Well, yeah. And just I'll come back to you, Julian, but let's just listen to Chris Bishop, because this is an example of how, you know, you cannot imagine someone who wants to have a coalition discussion with someone using language like this.
I would describe them as a last resort option.
How would it possibly work? It sounds like a worst-case scenario for voters.
Well, it's a worst-case scenario for us as well. As I say, we want to govern with the ACT Party.
I mean, worst-case scenario is not how you talk about your new best friend.
You send your bag man out to say those things, right? Yeah. And you create a bubble around yourself and you come across in that nice tone that was used by Christopher Luxon, and then you send someone else out to do that job. And those someone else's probably include former prime ministers like Sir John Key, who I spoke to earlier in the week, who was making suggestions like, oh, well, you could make him speaker and take him out of the mix. Mm. I mean, can you imagine?
That ain't going to happen.
I mean,
Mallard was a surprise. This would be preposterous.
Yeah. So, you know, floating things like that Winston would grab that and sort of sit outside of the action.
That's asking the player not to play.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is also possibly, isn't it, part of the... Aren't we already seeing the post-election negotiations?
Correct.
In a way? Because what you've got is you're trying to shove Winston into a corner saying, hey, look, no one really wants you, mate.
No.
It's ACT and National, and it's on you if you want to force us to go to the country again for an election. Mm. Otherwise, you can play ball. Now, I don't know that will work, because if I know one guy who would actually wear that and would wear the wrath of the public in calling another election, it's probably Winston Peters.
But that would, don't you think, and you can never know until it happens, that this has been a long, arduous campaign and a long few years to send people back to the polls because nobody can form a government. I think the person who does that will be punished, and punished handsomely.
I agree with that, but here's the issue with New Zealand First, is they don't need most of the public to like yeah. that. They only need 5, 6, 7%. He might get 9 in that scenario under a new election, because there might be people who go, oh, this is, you know, poor old Winston's been forced into a corner. That's the thing. When you are relying on a 5, 6, 7% party, you don't need the bulk of the population. And he doesn't need to be liked, that guy, either.
Yeah. And what would the impact of that be not just on Winston, but on the National Party? If they were forced in a position where they're the leading party and yet they still couldn't get
it
together,
this would
be the interesting thing, because what people I think need to know is that Peters would probably go in, from my reading of it and looking at the history, he'd probably go into an arrangement like that if it was, you know, 58, 59 seats to ACT and National and they need New Zealand First. One of the first things he'd want to do is say, well, it's a National New Zealand First government. You guys are on the backbenches. Yeah, he will play that tough. I mean, there's no one better at negotiating. Yeah. No one has done negotiations for 3 or 4 governments.
And Seymour has opened that door. I mean, Seymour's the one who's been saying it could just be confidence and supply, right? We don't need the baubles of office, says David Seymour. So yeah, he could, and we've talked about this before. Winston Peters doesn't necessarily want to be associated with a National ACT government that could be quite right-wing.
I wonder whether the easiest way to buy him off, and I don't mean that in any corrupt sense, but maybe the easiest way to placate him would be an 05 scenario where you saw Helen Clark in this situation. She forged an arrangement with New Zealand First where he was foreign minister and claimed not to be in the government. Now, political scientists will tell you that anyone who's in the executive is part of the government. Mm. So constitutionally, he is part of the government, but he claimed not to be in that 05 scenario. So could you have a situation where it's an ACT National minority government with 58, 59 seats under my scenario? You give Winston Peters the foreign minister job, outside cabinet, possibly Shane Jones, the provincial growth fund portfolio, outside cabinet, and say, the rest of it's on us. You don't have to deal with the economics and the social policies. You've got the PGF and the foreign ministry, and you can give us confidence and supply. That would be the tidiest way, in my view, of forging some sort of arrangement. Then he can go through that term saying, well, ACT and National doing all this stuff, this is our little bit quarantined, sequestered over here, and this is our sacrosanct little
and
bit.
And he can find some modern equivalent of the gold card to hold up as a win at
the
end of that
so
3 years.
You have two or three
things
like that.
That's the way we think it's going to go, because it's kind of worked previously, although there were situations, as we all know, where it didn't actually work perfectly at all, but that seems to be the tidiest scenario. The more we talk about him, the more he gets. And this is the cumulative effect that the Luxon has found himself in, of talking about Winston, not actually wanting to talk about him, but that gives more to Winston, which actually I think we'll see Winston grow even more over the last couple of weeks of this campaign.
Because that's one of the questions for me, is that that's been the past record. That's what history tells us, right? That when he gets oxygen, it inflates his balloon. But this is my point. It's different, right? There was always, in those contexts, parties trying to make nice with him. Mm. In this case, you've got David Seymour, for example, saying this.
Me and my colleagues, listen up.
Listen.
We'll work with anyone to try and fix it now.
So that's a yes, David. Will you work with Winston?
Look, I think ultimately, if a parliament's elected by the people, then you make it work. But I just say it's not credible for the guy who's had more chances to fix New Zealand's problems than anyone else alive.
Hang on.
Rebecca, I'm sorry.
It's
like an arsonist showing up dressed as a fireman saying, I'm here to help and fix it all for you. It's just not credible.
An arsonist turning up to the fire. And you've got Labour and the Greens and National all saying this guy's toxic, we don't want to work with him. Is it not different this time?
Well, I think this is the conundrum that is Winston Peters. He is there saying, I will work with anyone. It has got so bad. Mm. In order to save this fine land of ours, I will work with anyone. Oh, no, you've ruled out the Labour Party. Yes. So you won't work with anyone. Yes. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, every time someone mentions to him that Christopher Luxon has ruled him in by making this announcement that he will work with him, Winston responds by saying, no, I haven't been ruled in by anyone. It is the New Zealand people who will decide what happens after the election. And he says, quote, that is not how democracy is conducted, when he's told he's been ruled in or asked about being ruled in. But if that's the way democracy is conducted, can someone explain to me why he has ruled out Labour, because if we're waiting for the people to conduct democracy, then you would be leaving all options open for all parties, because otherwise what you've said there, the equation doesn't
and
add
he's
up.
Put boundaries on democracy before. He's said it previous elections that he'd only speak to the biggest party first, before he didn't speak to the biggest party first with Labour.
Yeah, consistency's never been a strong
point. So he's always had his conditions on how democracy works for
He had to rule out Labour because that was one of the base parts of his approach for this campaign.
But
because he knew that would resound with the population.
And that means now he can only fish in the right wing pool, right?
That's right.
The left bloc is not interested in him.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what has changed. What has materially changed is the people who, and how to put this, the people who arguably would grind Winston Peters' gears are not there, right? So Bill English is not there anymore. You know, long history with Bill English and his departure from the National Party, Winston's departure from
Treasurer, Finance Minister, right back to those days.
Yeah, right back to those days. The Ann Tollies and Paula Bennetts, who he took to court, are no longer there. So the people that he may have had, long held animosity towards.
He's called the National Party corrupt after dirty politics and so forth.
They're
so
gone, they're right? Gone. Those people are gone, and you've got a fresh leader.
Yeah.
Is that what is different?
Yeah, I think you're right. And I don't think the problem is with National and New Zealand First.
No.
The problem is it's a three-way cocktail with David Seymour and Winston Peters. And, you know, you're kind of getting involved in someone else's marriage, really, in that way. Because ACT and National thought that this was going to be a little, you know, we're going to shack up together for this new government. And that's what they thought. And the clip we played earlier of David Seymour was from a time when he was polling a bit better and he was, you know, he's now really had to realise that it isn't going to be quite as cosy, and there might be a third person in the marriage, as one former princess.
There is, and I take your point that this is a new National Party that he's dealing with, and so he can claim a clean slate to an extent. But it is interesting. You talked about Luxon's strategic decisions with this. I just wanted to play a couple of clips here because there is a backstory here, right? Let's start by going back to 2020 and looking at how Simon Bridges dealt with this.
I can't trust New Zealand First, and New Zealanders can't either. And New Zealanders are sick of the charades. National won't work with New Zealand First after the election, full stop.
So you're going to opposition in that situation?
If New Zealand First has the balance of power, we still won't work.
You'd rather be in opposition than work with Winston.
Well, I think what's important is what's in the interests of New Zealanders, not New Zealand First.
So those are exactly the Chris Hipkin lines we're hearing this time from Labour, from National
Lens. Well,
that's right, and everyone's had a high point of principle until they have seen that he's the difference between them taking power or not. I mean, Chris Hipkins has been powerful on this stuff, and we'll talk about the debate a little bit later on, but it's still true that Labour has formed governments with him in 2005 and then from 2017, and in fact wouldn't have got there without him. So none of these people are being consistent about New Zealand First and never have been, and what we've seen is that when it comes to the crunch and it's the difference between them taking the keys to the ministerial limos, they pick up the phone and dial Winston.
Can I just play one more clip before you come in, Jenny, because I really want to play this clip because it shows how far back the relationship with the tortured relationship with National leaders goes, but it also shows us a much younger and more handsome guy in Espinner.
Frustrating to deal with. He was extremely capable, although sometimes would get diverted. And I would make a personal judgment as he came into my office as to whether the envelope with the papers in it was either open or closed. And it often would tell me the extent to which he had either read what we were then going to discuss. And I learnt to both respect and manage it. And on those days, the meetings were short because clearly it was a train wreck waiting to happen.
So that's Winston Peters actually in government,
yeah.
A train wreck waiting to happen.
Mm. Well, that government lasted 18 months, didn't it? That was the first MMP government, and in August of 1980 he walked out of the cabinet, and that was the last time he went with National. They were all gone and he's still there.
Julian, pick up what you're going to say, because it's interesting, isn't it, that he has this deep legacy of... Governments struggle often.
No, absolutely.
And National trying to sell a strong and stable government.
You know, the question that people can ask of Chris Luxon, and he still hasn't figured out a way of answering this, is how you're going to manage this relationship between him and David Seymour. We talked earlier about those people with the National that he hated who are gone. The only one that he still hates that's in there at the moment is David Seymour. So how's he going to manage that relationship? Now, all his CEO experience would not have prepared him for this.
He needs to talk to HR.
that's right. And, you know, it was interesting before the debate yesterday, someone came up to me and he said, you know, do you know why Winston's polling at 6%? I said, no. And he said, it's you guys. He was actually talking about the caucus. And he said, because we were the ones who were talking him in, which actually isn't true. You know, we commentate on this stuff with him, and
the
you're right.
The power we have, Julian.
Yeah, yeah. You know, his legacy is so strong that he keeps coming back. The really interesting thing for me was that, you know, when I talked about that he normally picks up 1% or 2% or whatever it is in the last 2 weeks, what I had forgotten was when I looked at that poll, you've got the New Zeal Party, which is this new party that's come up on 1%. Alfred Nuttall's party.
Yep.
You've got a couple of other parties on 1%. The Loyal Party, who, by the way, still haven't registered, and we talked about this, they didn't register their candidates in time, they're still going to get 1%. And it seems to me that those staunch people are going to stay at 1%, where ordinarily, previously, he might have picked up some of them and might have got the extra 2%, and that might be the bit that stops him getting to 8%, which is what National would want, but he's still going to be there or thereabouts.
Chance he falls below 5?
I don't really think so. I put the chances personally at above 90% that he'll be back there. Right. I think if you see him on 6% in the TV1 poll, I mean, you never know because it hasn't happened yet, but we do know from history that the Greens don't tend to quite get as much as they are polling, largely because of the youth turnout and how that reduces and they don't turn up on the day. Yeah. So the Greens get slightly less than they were polling. This is what history tells us.
Yep.
And New Zealand First gets slightly more. And older voters, and he's very attractive to older voters, about 90% of over 65s vote. Yeah. And so they
it's
turn out.
It's a good day out. Come on.
Yeah. They turn out. And it's free.
That's right. And you just get like the Waiheke Ferry.
Well, you get your bus card, your gold card to get you there.
A couple of things on that, and the Jenny Shipley and the fact that relationship and coalition crumbled. We can never know, but you two will be acutely aware that Jim Bolger said that he felt he had good relationship with Winston Peters and that he would have gone the distance with him had National not had its own ructions going on with a leadership coup and Jenny Shipley coming
in.
We can't know that.
No, we can't. And you're right. And to be fair to Jacinda Ardern also made it through a term with him. But the difference again there with the Bolger New Zealand First government, and remember how the media and everyone else thought he was going to go with Labour, but that would have been Labour Alliance and New Zealand First.
He likes a small party.
Fewer number of moving parts
very
possible.
Good point.
Right?
Yeah, very
and
good.
This is the problem. It's like mixing a cocktail. Once you put three ingredients in, it's harder to get it right. And this is the difficulty you've got. I don't think it would be difficult. I think Christopher Luxon, who you guys have made good points, I don't think there's bad blood there. I think it could work.
Yeah.
The difficulty is the three-way coalition.
But the
it's
other
like
thing,
John Key three-way handshake. It's just difficult and awkward.
Yeah. The scenario you presented where you give him a portfolio like foreign minister and then there's the provincial growth fund that keeps everyone else occupied and out of your hair, and that's your territory and go away.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Labour, to a certain degree, handled it that way. So the thing is, though, when I looked and you said to me, not while we were recording, you said to me, hey, can you think of a few New Zealand First policies? And I sort of went back and had a look, and I'm thinking that it's going to be a difficult marriage because when you talk about key policies, superannuation being one of them for Winston Peters,
and
his
huge
absolute commitment to maintaining super eligibility at 65.
This needs to be the first question in the next stand-up, right?
The National Party has said it is not shying away from its intentions to raise the age of eligibility for super.
As is
that. So that's one of his core things and his core support bases right there. Foreign buyers, another thing, and immigration, things, drums that he has beaten many times
in
the lead-up to
the election.
He's
never delivered on immigration once in any of the governments he's been in.
But I'm just saying, asked about affordability of tax cuts. He's raised questions about the affordability of the tax program of the National Party, of which I believe two of the most senior leadership people, Christopher Luxon and Nicola Willis, have bet their jobs on, right? So, and then you think about that, and then the other things that he is bringing into the mix, like, you know, transgender toilets and issues that he's going down a rabbit hole on, and he wants to cap the job seekers' benefit 2 years in your entire lifetime. Does he want to cap the biggest universal benefit that New Zealand pays for 2 years in your lifetime?
What's the biggest benefit in New Zealand history, Lisa?
It's the pension.
Superannuation.
Mm. Yeah, unfortunately, it's pretty unfertile ground trying to go through New Zealand First policies and connect that to what would happen afterwards, because he campaigns, like they talk about campaigning in poetry and governing in prose. Hmm. I mean, Winston Peters campaigns on things that he doesn't want to go near. Yeah. He'll campaign on the evils of neoliberalism, on the dangers of open immigration. When he gets into government, does he look at any of the domestic portfolios? No. He takes the foreign minister's job, which keeps him out of the country most of the time.
The one thing he will not concede on, I would argue, is super.
I would agree with that.
He's not going to give that up. No. So where does that leave National when dug their toes in on that?
And also, it's not part of their tax plan, but it's also part of, because this is, you know, some years off, but it is, you're right, a clear ideological stand. Yeah. They've said that they've actually done the maths and we need to start raising super age.
I know I made the point earlier, rubbishing the claim that we were the ones who propelled Winston into 5%, but we just spent half an hour talking about him. The other thing I was going to mention, though, was if you're the ACT Party, you'd be worried because you've stagnated at 12%.
Yeah.
And potentially are going to go lower. The other thing I just wanted to mention very quickly on the latest polls is if you're the Māori Party, you're really worried. Because, and I know their argument will be that Māori voters, particularly young Māori voters, don't turn up in polls. But they're now at 2%. That means that the young, bright, shining star, Hanad Awhiti, Maipa Clark, won't make it into Parliament. And on the Māori television polls, they're not winning any of the electorate so far.
None at all.
Well, aside from Waiatiki, sorry. But they should have picked up one or two. They're behind in all of them, aside from Waiatiki.
Is that
when you've got an unpopular Labour Party, you would think that they would be sweeping up votes left, right and centre.
Where is that going then, do you think, Julian?
I mean, lots in the Greens. And that comes down to James Shaw and Marama Davidson, who have both been very good,
in previous debates,
which is interesting. Marama Davidson came up, I think it was in the TVZ poll recently, 2% preferred Prime Minister.
Yeah.
First time ever.
And she was. And we've got a clip to play. Lisa, you mentioned the welfare policies that came out this week. As you mentioned, New Zealand First, a 2-year lifetime limit on welfare. National.
Only some welfare.
Some welfare, sorry. National raising some a new range of sanctions and obligations around job seeker benefit in particular. And interestingly, making the change back that Labour has for the last couple of years put benefits up. Benefits as well as super up by the average wage.
Yeah, it's tagged to the average wage.
As opposed to inflation.
But National, their announcement is that they would make the benefit tagged to inflation.
Which is back where it was.
So
it smaller increases.
Wouldn't be increasing at the rates it has been.
All of that context was the setup that Marama Davidson was obviously very angry about that and said this on RNZ.
The research has not been able to be clear about whether they work or not, but that they do create more hardship. And I'm pretty pissed off about this, to be honest. I am trying to talk to the thousands and thousands who are sitting there feeling alone, feeling abandoned by bloody political leaders who just don't talk to them, who just don't get it, but who want to throw them across the floor.
Guy, you're saying a strong campaign.
Yeah, very much so. And if you look, you know, back to a campaign like 2017 for the Greens, when Materia Tude, again, similar amounts of passion, but it utterly blew up on her. Quite different circumstances, obviously. But, you know, the Greens can implode in their campaigns. And I think Marama Davidson, in my view, has been one of the standout performing leaders in this campaign and really taken her opportunities. And I guess they've got the advantage of not having to play to the centre, which is the difficulty that Hipkins has found himself in.
Yeah, you have you You're not questioning what they stand for. Not at one point are you questioning
what the Greens stand for. Yeah, you know
what their policies are, what they would do. You absolutely know.
Yeah, and they led it on dental too, didn't they? Yeah. Ahead of Labor.
Whereas arguably you might say that there'll be people questioning what does Labor stand for
absolutely.
Now? What does this Labor stand for? Mm. You have none of those questions around the Green Party. It is very clear what they stand for. And interesting her comments around beneficiaries, because part of me wondered why National was polling the way it was, why they made such a big deal out of benefits this week. Why did they go there? You know, why did they dredge up National Party of Past, Paula Bennett,
when they're
Sanchez,
trying to look a slightly softer
Well, they're
version,
trying to present compassionate conservatism, aren't they? Isn't that part of, because they're moving seemingly towards the centre line with some of their comments, you know, drugs is a health issue.
But that sense of obligation and giving something back is always part of the conservative, compassionate conservatism view, right?
Absolutely. But
tough love.
But what's really important about this week is that you put out a video saying you'll work with Winston Peters if you have to, and then you release a policy that comes out hours before Winston Peters says his thing about benefits. You can't know when he was making his announcement, but you potentially are playing to a corner of voters, a little wedge of voters that were going to go with Winston Peters, given his attitudes towards welfare and benefits and paying people back.
How did my come back?
Yeah.
Okay. The debate this week down
which one?
The road. Well, this is a good question.
You know, because they're the young thick leaders. And fast, aren't they? Kaupapa Māori debate.
Kaupapa Māori one. What did we think about the Kaupapa Māori debate? Was it?
There were some things that were said by ACT Party representatives and National Party representatives with the benefit of hindsight. I think they'd go, maybe I shouldn't have said that. The whole $4 a week thing to Tama Pōtaga, who, by the way, is a really good friend of mine and was a groomsman at my wedding. So I'll be careful
full
what
disclosure.
I say.
Full
disclosure. But, you know, $4 a week, what can you get for that? Lots of rice and 2 protein bars. No, bro. And showed a little bit of out of touch. Yeah. And didn't go down well with the crowd. It didn't go well with everyone else. Karen Shaw, who was there for the ACT Party, didn't even know what Te Matatini was. Lots of social media pick up on those kind of things. Not a great performance. Standout performer, Marama Davidson.
Yeah.
I thought it was a really interesting debate. It was well worth a watch. It is still online. You can see it there. It was the moderator was Mikey Sherman, who didn't. Excellent, excellent job in my view. There were other interesting moments when they were asked to put their hands up if they were a landlord.
Right. Yes.
So a number of hands went up, I think 4.
Yeah,
went up. And then she followed through and said, well, what are you charging? What rent are you charging your tenants? And Tama Pōtaka refused to say.
I think in the end he said, well, less than the Hamilton median or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, which is...
So he knows.
What does that mean? So he knows exactly. Yet, I mean, and that was an interesting, because you didn't have to say much more after that, given that the party has introduced policies which it says is going to put downward pressure on rent, right?
Yep.
You have your guy there who was in the rental market, not prepared to discuss what he's charging people. Willie Jackson couldn't wait to tell everybody how much he was charging for his properties.
Yeah, exactly.
But there were some interesting moments in there, and I thought it was interesting. You mentioned Karen Shaw, who is the ACT candidate, who openly said that she was raised in a different environment to a number of the other candidates who were representing the Māori policies for their parties. So she was in a slightly awkward situation at various moments, but it was a good watch, that debate.
Yeah, no, it was. And the only other thing I would say is that we're doing a Māori policy debate on the Hui on Thursday next week, so I look forward to that. Interesting choice, John Tamahere as the president of the Māori Party, as their representative, not Debbie Ngaruapeka. I know Rawiri Waititi's mother passed away, so they potentially were unavailable. It'll be interesting to see if JT's their representative at our debate next week.
Well, he represented Te Pāti Māori in the crime law and crime debate on Radio New
on
Zealand
on
as well.
Yes, he did.
It's an interesting strategy to keep bringing him back. The other debate this week was the News Hub leaders debate. And look, there was we haven't got a lot of time, so I just want to jump straight into this grab from the debate, because it was quite a moment.
This is a quote from last week, and it's from a New Zealand First candidate speaking at a Meet the Candidates meeting. And I get a bit angry about this, because this is a direct quote. and he's talking about Māori. He said, cry if you want to, we don't care. You pushed it too far. We are the party with the cultural mandate and the courage to cut out your disease and bury you permanently. Christopher, you're willing to work with these people. Why?
Well, I'll tell you why, because I'll tell you what's going to happen is I don't want to work with I don't want to work with New Zealand First, but I am going to make the call if it means that I stop you to Party Murray and the Greens coming to power in 3 years.
Do you think that's racist?
I do. I don't think that's acceptable at all.
So why are you willing to have them sitting around the cabinet table?
I don't think that's acceptable at all.
That was maybe Chris Hipkins' best moment in the campaign, probably. But it was interesting. I was at the debate. I know, well, Julian obviously was because he was on the telly afterwards. But I was sitting there in the crowd and I went down to the stand-up afterwards. And because that was a bit of a wow moment. There was a New Zealand First racist thing in there. And so I said to both of the leaders afterwards, do you think that New Zealand First was a racist party?
Do you think that's representative of the whole New Zealand First party? Are you saying that they are a racist party?
Those are the sorts of messages that New Zealand First candidates have been putting out there around the country.
Are they a racist party?
I think that's absolutely a racist statement, and I think New Zealand First are absolutely playing the race card in this campaign.
So therefore, New Zealand First, do you see that as representative of the party and the racism within that party?
Not necessarily. You know, it's obviously a candidate that's made a grossly offensive remark, and that position is, I don't condone that at all.
Chris.
But all I'm saying to you is, and I want New Zealanders to understand this, you know, I don't want to have to do that, but as a last resort, I will do it as a principle because I do not want to see 3 more years of this country going backwards under this government.
What did you make of it?
I thought it was a powerful line from Hipkins and a good technique, and he was aggressive and he's got nothing to lose and he threw it all out there and good on him, and I think technically probably won the debate. It might be a bit late for him. And it would have been a lot more powerful if New Zealand First hadn't used those sort of dog whistling tactics way back in the late 90s with saying Queen Street, you couldn't recognise it from Asia anymore. You saw the multi-headed Hydra comments in the post 9/11 and attacking the Muslim communities. I mean, he's been playing this game for a long time, so it's a bit rich of Chris Hipkins to say, what a shocker, he's terrible, we would never work with him, when he installed you into government in 2017 and in 2005. Strong tactic, and I think it worked for him on the night, but when you look at the principle over time, it doesn't really stack up.
The one thing about that, though, I think you're right, because obviously Labor has been in government with him and he's not just been making these comments, and the party has not just been making these comments in recent times. What was quite powerful also was when Chris Hipkins was challenged on the fact that he had been in a government with Winston Peters, and he just straight out said, yep, I have. And it will never happen again.
But who would believe that?
No, exactly. There is that point. But on the opposite side of the coin, when you're asked to comment on a statement like that, which was like, it was like, that was a sucker punch. It was like, oh, whoa, who said that? You know, that's what you sort of felt in that moment. And to have Christopher Luxon was equivocating there, right? And again, oh, it's me delivering the history lessons today.
Hello.
Okay. Hello. Take you back to Jim Bolger.
Put my feet up over here and have a little nap while you take over.
Jim Bolger called out Winston Peters in the lead up to the 96 election for running a racist campaign. He accused him of running a racist campaign. And, you know, that was the comments about Asian people and all
Asian
the rest
invasion.
Of it. Regardless of the fact that he ended up in a situation where he needed to befriend Winston Peters and form a government with him, he wasn't having a bar of that. He stood on principle and said no. And a man, Irish New Zealand background, as you know, he said, I abhor racism, and he called him out about it. And then, yet he still went on to form a government with him. So I think there is ways to maintain your principles, say what you value, and people, I think, understand that there has to be a certain degree of pragmatism, because who wants to go out on October the 15th, 16th, 17th and vote again?
It's interesting that conversation, not me, it's that part of that context of that conversation, the stand-up, was Luxon was being pushed on principles. And is this a principled stand to be able to be willing to work with a party that you were saying you don't want to work with, and that you say have, making offensive statements like this? And his argument, and it's going to be interesting to see how this stretches and how voters respond to this, his argument was, my first principle is changing the government. My first principle is that 3 more years of Labour, Greens, Te Pāti Māori would be so bad that I will be prepared to take this hit. And is that, do people see that as noble, or do they see it as a grasp for power?
Well, the other way to look at that, as you say, is you know, my first principle is I want to be in power.
Yeah, well, that's, so that's the other way of looking at it.
Which is, yeah, I mean, he can spin it that way. I think everyone knows that, you know, he'd be doing this as a last resort, as he says. But does that make it any better? And it is difficult to have a position of principle when you're saying you don't want to deal with someone, but you would, in order to get there.
Yeah, there were other parts of the debate where he was awfully slippery and was questioned on a number of things and just wouldn't answer the question. But it seems to be, if you're Hipkins, you're going, yeah, look, I think I did pretty well. If you're Luxon, you're thinking, okay, look at Twitter or whatever it's called nowadays, and go, did anything actually mortally wound me out of that? No, not really. No. You know, did my inability to be able to answer the question directly and get what I needed to and divert and all that kind of stuff, is that going to hurt me? No, not really. No.
He, you're right. He struggled to, he wouldn't answer a bunch of questions and he looked evasive. But in between it all, the smile stayed. Yeah. He didn't look flat.
Demeanour was good.
His demeanour was good. You know, he still got
and he
that.
He joked a few times. Yeah. And he did
even
look,
when he was taking the hits.
Yeah. In that sort of Key-esque way.
Exactly. Yeah.
But
exactly.
And I think that is pretty genuine from him. I think he's got himself into a position where he is able to bring pretty much his authentic self. He's the CEO guy.
Yeah.
He shows his inability to answer questions. When someone says, oh, would someone taking MDMA at a festival, are they a criminal? It's a great question, by the way. But as Helen Clark would have said, well, I very much doubt the police would arrest anyone for taking one MDMA tablet, and that would, you know, probably get you out of it. He hasn't got those skills, but does it matter? And do people really?
No, but I thought that was. See, that's why I think I disagree with you a little bit. You're right. There's an authenticity there about he's got that Key vibe where don't sweat the small stuff, and it's all small stuff. I'm not going to get too tied up about the stuff. But that answer I thought was really interesting about the MDMA because. Clearly, his political instinct or training, and I think he's so trained, right? His political training was towards a liberal response.
Yes,
was treated as a health,
treated as a health thing.
And then he suddenly realised, criminal.
Well, it was a great question from Paddy Gow, but it is a difficult one, isn't it? Because is that, let's take a 27-year-old lawyer who goes to a music festival and has an MDMA tablet as they're zinging out to their favourite band. Are they a criminal? Well... In the eyes of the law, you've broken that law. But are you a criminal if you break the speed limit? I mean, it's one of those ones where we have some fun with it in the media, and I'm certainly not bagging Paddy for the question. I thought it was good fun, and these sorts of things we need to see how they react and where they lie. But I don't know. I mean,
my point is that it's a fascinating question. But I don't think I got an authentic response from him. I actually didn't think that was authentic. That was a calculation, right? He was trying to figure out the right thing.
I
don't feel at the end of that I genuinely knew what he believed. And the same, we know with Mother Davidson what she genuinely believes. I don't think I know from that answer what Christopher Luxon really believes.
I think you're right.
I think
his first instinct was the truth, that he doesn't see them as criminals and he'd like to see it some other way. He was talking about drug testing, which they voted against.
Yes. Yeah.
But I think you're right that his inclination is relatively progressive on some of those things. But then he caught himself and realised that, yeah, they were criminals in the eyes of the law.
Yeah.
But, yeah, maybe you're right that it was difficult to gauge exactly what the authentic response was.
Yeah, when you're in pole position and you're doing a debate like this, all you need to do is hug the other guy. And there are parts where he tried to, but also in the way he talked about things with, I agree with Chris on that.
Yeah.
And we should be bypassing.
They go down well.
People love that. The other one where Hipkins got him on gangs and, if you take the patches off, how are you going to know who a gang member is and all that kind of stuff, which again is a zinger.
You would have thought
he would have handled that a lot better. Crime is one of their big pushes, and I actually think Hipkins threw him over on gangs and crime. Here's the other thing, though. They spoke specifically about what happened at the Tangier or Portiki. None of those guys has gone to Portiki. None of them have been there.
Interesting point.
None of them know anything about what the local response was in Portiki. So, you know, a lot of this is just political theatre. The problem is, if you're a Labour Party supporter or if you're in the left, you were wondering where this guy was 3 months ago, so you could try and bake in the narrative around Luxon. And it feels to me like it's too late now. There's 2 weeks away. People, I think, like the look of Luxon enough? I mean, look at preferred prime minister polls, they're pretty even.
Yep.
Your ability to be able to change people's thinking on that is limited now. The narrative is baked in about him is he's capable enough to be able to manage. Let's give him a go.
Well, we will find out in the next 7 days before the next episode of Caucus whether this has changed anything. Yeah. Has this actually, is it as baked in as you say? Or have we actually got a little bit of spice left in this recipe yet? We'll talk about that next time on Caucus. We're out of time, but it's been lovely to have your company. Do follow us on your favourite podcast app, watch us on YouTube, and we'll see you next week.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.